Members of the different committees and officials from different departments.
Yeah.
Chair, as you said, Dr. Grant, when we do the presentation, but we just really want to open up by thanking you for the opportunity to come and engage on this matter. The subject we are constantly seized with as a department. The area of huge concern, and hence we appreciate the opportunity for you to present. Dr. Grant will indicate we were even discussing this meeting yesterday. We had a departmental meeting and we also discussed this meeting. We'll be presenting it also for having a meeting of education ministers on Thursday, Friday. We will also discussing. So it's a subject that really is an ongoing subject. So we'll share with you what our approach is, but we are also receiving lots of very helpful guidance on things that we should not do out of the panic. Yesterday, I mean, just as an anecdote, I was sharing with the police department that when I was MEP, I just thought it was the best thing to take young people to prison, to really scare them, to say, if you don't behave, they're going to change your uniform for this orange overall. The research yesterday was saying that the last thing that we should do. There's research to say the worst thing to do, because when kids are vulnerable, even that business, that aggression, violence, could play into the space and attract them to get into it. So because there's lots of panic and concern around this area, we've taken also a view that we have to really be guarded and be careful so that we don't aggravate a very difficult situation by taking wrong decisions. But we'll share with you what the thinking is, what the research is, what we're doing. As I said, on Thursday, Friday, we're also discussing the matter on an ongoing basis. It's a steady item on our agenda. Every meeting we meet at MEC, amongst the other steady items, the question of safety, health, social cohesion, but also issues of HIV and AIDS, it's a steady item. So I don't want to take too much of your time, Chair. As I've indicated, there's an extended cabinet, so the Deputy Minister can't come, so we've agreed that she goes to the extended cabinet, I remain here. So it's not at all convenient that she's not here. And yeah, so as a department, we've asked Dr. Grandin as the head of the area which deals with the matters of safety and social cohesion department. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, members. It's quite a lengthy presentation, so I'll try and work through it as quickly as I can. So by way of introduction, school violence describes the physical, psychological, and sexual violence that takes place in schools. School violence is not a South African problem. It's a global phenomenon. It happens throughout the world. Last year, UNICEF conducted, the United Nations Children's Fund conducted a systematic review of school violence across 32 countries, and South Africa participated in that, and these were the findings. That globally, 32% of learners have been bullied at least once in the past month. 32.4%, which is like a third, has been physically attacked in the last year, and 36% of learners have been involved in a physical fight in the last year. These are global statistics. Around the world, bullying is the most common form of violence in schools. So bullying is the most common form. And most school violence occurs between learners. Violence seldom occurs between perpetrators from outside of the school and learners inside. So most of the violence actually occurs amongst learners. School violence most often occurs on school premises, but as you know, It also happens on the way to school and on the way from school. And bullying is increasingly taking place online, this phenomenon of cyberbullying. So let's look at school violence in South Africa. We've done quite a few studies, and there's quite a few international studies available on this topic at the moment. So schools in communities with high levels of crime and violence have higher rates of school violence. So if a school is located in an area with high levels of crime and violence, that school will be challenged with school violence more than others. School violence most often occurs within the classroom. Not on the playground, not outside, but actually in the classroom, and often in the absence of a teacher. And although corporal punishment, as you know, has been banned since the introduction of the SASSA in 1996, it remains one of the most common forms of violence in our schools. Bullying rates across our schools is high by international standards, although it is slightly lower in Kwinta 4 and 5 schools. So the schools that are a little bit more well off, the bullying rates are lower. Most violence, as I've already said, is perpetrated by learners, and sexual violence is common in our schools. Schools that are poorly managed have higher rates of violence than bullying. So if you have a weak principal, you're going to have higher rates of bullying. And we've got a phenomenon in South Africa where we've got quite a large number of overage learners in the system, and we think that that increasingly contributes to the rates of violence that we have. And then importantly, we think that where communities take ownership of schools, violence is lower. Where communities take ownership of what happens in the school, the rates of violence are actually lower. This slide just indicates the rates of bullying, and it makes the point that if you're in a no-fee school, you're more likely to be bullied than if you're in an independent school. And this one breaks it down per province, giving an indication of the provincial breakdown of bullying in schools. This slide is quite important because it is probably the most reliable data that we have on school violence. It's data that is collected by SACSA through the General Household Survey. And as you can see, we've got a downward trend in the rate of violence in schools. In 2013, we had a rate of almost 15%. We've reduced it over the last 3, 4, 5 years to about 11%. So the trend in school violence is downward, even though, of course, what happens in social media often paints the picture that things are getting worse. This is also quite an important slide because it indicates that there's very little difference between the violence that is experienced by males and females in our schools. This particular slide comes from the TALIS report, and I know that the committee will, the Basic Education Committee will get a briefing on TALIS next week. But you can see that in South Africa, the rates of, and I should indicate that this is self-reported by school principals, that the rate of intimidation and bullying among students is higher than the OECD average. OECD is at 14% and South Africa is at 34%. But you can see in terms of online bullying, whereas in terms of online bullying, where the rate is 3.4 for OECD countries, and South Africa is 1.4. So it's lower. But when it comes to intimidation of or verbal abuse of teachers or staff, South Africa is significantly higher than the OECD rate. We have almost 8% and OECD is at 3.1. In terms of bullying, because bullying is the most common form of violence, it's quite important that we understand this trend a bit better. So bullying is an aggressive pattern of behavior. It's not an attack. It's a persistent pattern that reoccurs, involving a real or perceived imbalance of power, and has an adverse impact on the victim's bystanders and the bully. Bullying is far more common in no-fee schools, which is a point that I've made earlier. About 50% of learners reported being bullied on a weekly basis. Boys are more likely to be bullied, physically bullied, than girls. and nearly one quarter of all grade 5 learners who report experiencing bullying on a weekly basis underperform at school. And this is really the significance of bullying for education. A child that is bullied is less likely to perform at school than a child that is not. And that's not just in South Africa, it's in fact a trend around the world. Because sexual violence is such a big part of violence in our schools, it's also important, and we've got the Optima study that was done in 2016 year at the University of Cape Town. And it says that one in three young people had experienced some form of sexual abuse before the age of 17. So one in three, about 35% of all children that are in our schools have experienced sexual violence by the time they get to grade 12. And this is quite significant. Boys experience sexual abuse at a slightly higher rate than girls. And this is uncommon around the world, that boys experience sexual abuse at almost the same rate as girls. Sexual abuse is closely associated with mental health symptoms, and good parent-teen relationships, a good relationship between a parent and his or her children, is the best way of actually preventing sexual abuse amongst teenagers. So having painted the picture of what the situation is like in our schools, that the trend is downwards but that we still face significant challenges, what is the response of the Department of Basic Education? The National School Safety Framework remains our primary strategic response to school violence. And this is a response that is endorsed around the country by all 9 provincial education departments. It is a comprehensive approach that coordinates and consolidates all school safety interventions in the sector. It is based on a social ecological systems model which locates the school within its broader community. And this is quite important because, as we know, where communities work with schools, the rates of violence in the school is reduced. It relies on collaboration and partnerships, and one of our great partnerships in terms of the NSSF is with the South African Police Service. South Africa joined the Safe to Learn global campaign at the end of 2018. The minister signed South Africa up to it to end violence in schools in partnership with UNESCO and UNICEF. And in terms of this particular campaign, the campaign has added further granularity to the NSSF, and it is called the Inspire Framework. Chair, I want to do this quite quickly, but to take you through each one of these items that constitutes this particular framework. So the framework has 7 components. The first one is implementation and law enforcement, norms and values, safe environment, parent and caregiver support, income and economic strengthening, response and support services, and then education and life skills. So in terms of implementation and law enforcement, we think that in South Africa, the legislative and policy environment is adequate for us to deal with issues of safety in schools. We've got legislation that has banned corporal punishment, criminalizes sexual abuse and exploitation of children, limits alcohol misuse, and restricts firearms in schools. In addition, South Africa has clear political leadership and high-level commitment to address school violence and bullying. One of the key factors that stands out in countries where they have reduced school violence is political commitment to school safety. And in this regard, school safety, as the Minister has indicated, is now one of the 6 apex priorities of the 6th administration. So the political leadership exists. 2 protocols were introduced, and this is some of the work that we've done recently. 2 protocols were introduced in 2018. One on the management of sexual abuse and harassment, and the other one on management and corporal punishment. We've gone through the last semester of 2018, gone around the country to train subject advisors, district officials in the use of these 2 protocols. We've also signed in the Education Labor Relations Council, we signed Collective Agreement 3 of 2018, which simplifies and consolidates prosecution of teachers accused of sexually abusing learners. Now, this was quite an important collective agreement for us to have signed, because previously, in terms of how the system was set up, the teacher that is found guilty of sexual abuse, let's say in the Western Cape, that teacher is dismissed by the local education department. But the teacher then can appeal to the ERC and then appeal to SAIS. And so what would happen is there would be two separate disciplinary hearings that would take place. What often would happen is, because the process took so long for us to finalize, sometimes what happens is it takes 2-3 years before the ERC hearing sits. And because some of the evidence is no longer available, or some of the witnesses don't want to testify any longer, that particular teacher would be found not guilty. And so we've tightened that loophole so that teachers can't get away anymore. We are working, as part of this agreement, we're working very closely with SAIS. There is a bit of a challenge with SAIS, because they're guided by the SAIS Act that we will have to amend, but we're in the process of having that particular conversation with SAIS so that we ensure that once you're found guilty, you can't teach in our school. We also have partnerships with the Department of Justice and the Department of Social Development. We're in the process of signing MOUs with those two departments, and it's really to give our provincial education department and our school governing bodies access to the sexual offences register and the child protection register, so that we can vet teachers and staff before they actually get into school. And then we've established, through a process that the minister has initiated, we've had, I think, 3 school safety summits over the last 5 years, and we've established a national school safety steering committee that will now drive implementation of the Inspire network around the country. But as we know, and like the minister was explaining to us yesterday, we don't want to deal with these things after the fact. We actually don't want children to be raped. We don't want children to be sexually abused by teachers. And so one of the things that we need to build into the system is to address the norms and values of our society. Mm-hmm. And as we know, with the high rates of femicide that we face as a country, some of the marches that we've seen and protests that we've seen over the last week or so, these issues are quite important to us as a department. We have to address harmful gender norms and social norms if we are to address school violence. You can't police the violence away. You actually have to change behavior by changing norms and values. And the department has quite a few programs in this regard that I'll just mention, but that of course we can discuss further if it is required. We've had, in partnership with the Global Fund, we've had a program called Keeping Girls in School for the last 5 years. We know that schooling is protective for children. If you stay in school, you're less likely to use drugs, you're less likely to become pregnant, you're less likely to drop out of school eventually. So schooling in itself is protective. We've got a Dove self-esteem program that we do with a company called Unilever. We're developing programming for boys, because we think boys are particularly vulnerable at this time and that we need to do more to focus on them. And we've rolled out a homophobic bullying prevention campaign over the last 5 years. Community mobilization, and these are some of the activities that are currently done in some of our provinces. The Western Cape is rolling out a values campaign, and in the Northwest we, over the last 3 months or so, working together with the MEC there, we rolled out moral regeneration dialogues throughout the province. But we do think that there's more work that we should be doing as education in this regard, by linking up with our faith-based organizations to see what we can do in partnership. We also are very keen to increase the kind of work that we do around bullying prevention. In terms of safe environments, part of the strategy that we introduced to the NSSF is to actually identify, working together with the SAFs, to identify our schools that are most at risk. And at those schools, what we've done is to improve the physical or the built environment of those schools. And here we're talking about the provision of fences, metal detectors, burglar proofing, alarm systems, and bullet proofing. Some of our schools in the Western Cape, where we have very high gang violence, we put in a bullet proof fencing, for example. A closure of taverns and liquor outlets in close proximity to schools. And again, we've been working very closely with SAPS, DTI, that I believe has now changed the legislation, but also SALDA to go around the country and close taverns close to schools. Some of the members that sit on the Basic Education Committee in the past 5 years have indicated some of those schools to us, and we've gone ahead and closed them. We also in partnership with the South African Police Services. We do search and seizures. These are unannounced. That was between the local police station and the school principal. So these are unannounced. The police turns up, they raid, they check the bags, and often we find quite dangerous weapons and drugs on school children. And the provision of security guards, this is our argument at this point is that we should consider security guards for schools at high risk. And this is an ongoing discussion that we're having with Treasury, but of course a difficult one in the current fiscal condition. Parent care and support. See, so comprehensive parent and caregiver support is a program that is absolutely important. We know that in some cases where parents work long hours, they leave early, children are often, you know, unsupervised during the course of the day, and what kind of support do we provide to those parents? We have several partnerships in this regard. We've got a partnership with the Department of Social Development, with the Department of Health. We are now developing one with the Medical Research Council, and we have a parenting program that we've done together with the National Education Collaboration Trust for the last 5 years. Part of this work has to involve school visits. We've got about 3,000 learner support agents in the system. They are stationed at high-risk schools, and what we ask them to do is, if learners are absent for a period of time, to then do a home visit and find out why those learners are absent so that we can provide support to them. Community dialogues on the importance of education. As you know, often communities disrupt schooling. Communities, there's a local road that isn't built, the school isn't closed down, and we think if parents value education, they would also value the safety of learners within the school, and so that's quite an important strategy. And what we want to do is to promote greater support and supervision of boys. We've just concluded a study together with the Swiss Development Corporation and a small NGO called MIET Media and Education Trust. And it focused specifically on boys. And one of the things that boys were saying was that parents tend to not supervise them. There's no curfew for them, there's curfew for the daughters or for the girls in the house, but not for them. And they actually miss the fact that there is little discipline provided to boys within the home. And so this is quite an important aspect of this work. As you know, inequality and poverty drive violence. And so what you need to do as the state then is to provide some form of economic strengthening for households. And one of the things we were discussing with the minister yesterday is what is the role of education in that regard? What can we do in our sector to ensure that we also provide support to households and to families? So the first one is to actually ensure that families that do have access or that do qualify for social grants, including the child support grant, that they access them. We know that young girls, when they get pregnant, they wait about 2 to 3 years before they access the grant. And as a result, there's nobody to look after the child. And so two-thirds of young girls in South Africa that fall pregnant do not come back to school, simply because they don't have the economic means to come back. And so the child support grant is quite important in that respect. We're also saying ensure effective implementation of the pro-poor education policies that we already have in the system. The National School Nutrition Program. Around the world, it is estimated that simply by providing school meals, the state contributes about 15% to the household income, just because we provide the NSNP. So the NSNP is quite an important intervention in that regard. The learner transport to ensure that learners get to school, the integrated school health program, and the norms and standards for school funding, that is provided on time to schools. But we also say we've got an opportunity to work with the private sector to further support families and households. So we've built the Breakfast Alliance. Alliance, which is an alliance with a range of private sector partners, where they provide breakfast to children in schools on a daily basis. We've got several partnerships in this regard. We've got one with Tiger Brands, with Unilever, with Pioneer Foods. We're now talking to Woolworths. They seem to be going to take that in. We've got a school hygiene program where we provide toothpaste, toothbrushes, and soap to all grade ones, quintile 1 to 5 schools every year. It's a 5-year partnership that we've got with Unilever. It encourages children to just wash their hands and brush their teeth. Because we know from the work that we've done on the integrated school health program that the biggest problem children confront in South Africa is with their oral health. And then promote greater economic opportunities in education. So we've got learner support agents that we pay into our HIV grant. We've got 3,000 at the moment. But we also have volunteer food handlers in our schools. We've got about 56,000 women that cook the NSNP meals. And what we've done now working with one of our partners is to provide an actual training course for those women so that at the end of the program, you can actually get into full-time employment. And the minister opened a kitchen in Pietersburg earlier this year where the food handlers were given their certificates. And 4 of the women were reporting that they already got employed at the local hotel. And then response and support services, which is the second last one, Chair, and then I'll conclude. So it's to ensure that each district has a district-based support team in place. These are itinerant teams that we're playing already, and these teams are being established as we speak around the country. That every school, each school has a school safety committee in place that takes overall responsibility for school safety, and we're encouraging these committees to be a subcommittee of the SGB so that the SGB assumes overall responsibility for safety in the school. As I've indicated already, we provide 3,000 learner support agents for our hotspot schools at the moment, and the provision of counseling services to victims and the LSAs, we're in the process of training them. Most of them have been trained this year on trauma counseling so that they can also provide those kinds of services, and to be clear about the referral systems that are available. Working closely with the SACs, we've got at the moment I think more than 19,000 schools that are linked to police stations, and we're encouraging local policemen to be identified and linked to the school principal and to those policemen on a regular basis to visit the school. We are also talking to the Department of Social Development about the provision of school social workers to all schools. As I've indicated to the Basic Education Committee at our last sitting, we are busy developing a school social work qualification so that you don't just train social workers but you actually train them to come and work in schools to work with young people. And then one of the initiatives that we currently have, which is to increase the number of safe hubs with appropriate aftercare programs for children and youth. So in the Western Cape, these are called, the safe hubs are referred to as MOD centers. In Gauteng, they call them safe hubs, and in the Free State and in KZN, they refer to as safe parks. In the Free State, we have built quite a few of these safe parks together with the Cyril Ramaphosa Foundation over the last year or so. We do think that we need specific programming for boys, that you don't grow up to be a rapist. You don't grow up buying into this notion of rape culture. Mm. And so this is one of the areas that we've identified. We know that boys are falling behind in school. We know that boys are not accessing higher education at the same rate as girls. And it's all about this. It's about the lack of care and support in the home by parents. We think that boys are boys and are hard enough to face the challenges of the world and should be left unsupervised. And so this is work that we've done. We know around the world there is no evidence to support the work that we need to do with boys. There's a lot of evidence for what works for girls, but very little on what works for boys. And so that's the work that we're currently doing with some of our partners. And lastly, Chen, the provision of sports, arts, and culture and extramural activities is a gap in our work around safety. And we need to do quite a lot more working with, and I know that we're coming later next week to come and present to education and sports, you know, around this issue. Education and life skills, and this is the last component of the strategy, and then I'll close. So, improved training of teachers on classroom management and discipline. Now, this is quite an important one. There is this particular incident that got circulated on social media quite a bit. It's quite an old one, I think it's about 2 or 3 years old. But where the teacher, you can't hear the audio, but the teacher says something to the child, and the child walks away, and then comes back and grabs the teacher and hits her. And what it turns out, which is what the minister told us after, was that apparently every day that that particular child comes into the classroom, the teacher would say, walk far away from me because you stink. You must wash. And so often what happens is our teachers aren't trained well enough to de-escalate the conflict that happens. Teachers often add to the escalation of the conflict. And so one of the things that we're working with our higher education department around at the moment, and we're almost at the point where we have secured the funding for this, is to establish a center at one of our universities that can actually do the research, work with teachers, do the training in the provinces to ensure that teachers are better prepared to manage the classes in terms of the conflict that happens with young people. We've been working for the last 5 years on strengthening the implementation of life orientation and life skills, ensure high quality learner support, learning and teaching support materials and textbooks, and that process is almost done. We're developing 9 life orientation state-owned textbooks, which should be able to, which should come into the system next year, and then to increase the knowledge on sexual abuse and sexual and reproductive health in schools. One of the things, for example, that we do through comprehensive sexuality education in the foundation phase is to indicate to young children as young as 5 or 6, what are your green zones where somebody is allowed to touch you? It's okay to touch you in your green zone, but it's not okay to touch you in these zones, and these are your red zones. It's a simple way of teaching children to actually speak up when they are touched inappropriately. Implementation imperatives of the NSSF, and I'm concluding, Chair. The first one is that our responses must be evidence-based, and it's the point the Minister made earlier. What works? What actually shows that it has impact? And to optimize those interventions in the system. Secondly, that it has to be specific and context-appropriate interventions. In the Western Cape, where a lot of our challenges is around gangsterism, it's a different intervention to what you'll have in Limpopo, for example. And then what the INSPIRE framework allows us to do as government, and we in the process of taking all of this work through the social cluster, is it allows us to work as government in an integrated fashion. So it's multi-sectoral intervention. It is not only education, it relies on DSD, it relies on health, it relies on the SAPS, the MPA, and the Department of Justice. It's critical as part of this process that we continue to train our teachers, as I've indicated, and to have appropriate monitoring and evaluation systems in place to track our progress. And in conclusion, there is no silver bullet for the scourge of school violence. It's something that we have to commit to, that we have to collaborate on, and that we've got to work in partnership, not only with other government departments, but also with communities. Old school approaches, as we know, are better to deal with school violence than approaches that take children or teachers out of the school to train them. It's important to provide life skills to enable children to speak up and seek support when they're required, and to give priority to those children who are most at risk, children of a different race, ethnicity, disability, gender, and sexual orientation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, just a few additions that have been left out. I mean, our discussions here, they're focused on the boy child issue, as we correctly indicated, that there's very little understood or developed about how to handle the girl child. But what also came from the research check it also admits them to intervene. In a sort of predatory signal. If you come there, there's nothing you can do. It has become the DNA of children. So the studies are saying you have to intervene as early as possible. And that's where the role of the home and parenting comes in, so that you intervene at the right time. Because if they come after 12 years, by the time you see the symptoms, there's very little you can do to prevent behavior. The other one which we also are looking at, we're also in discussion, I'm glad that we also present social development around just creating safety nets, because in cabinet last week when we agreed on the IMC to be gender-based violence, we argued quite strong that by the time we go for the rape, it's late. Damage has been quite serious. So there must be a national plan on safety nets on children, quite early. How to support your single-headed household. Because I can imagine being a single woman with four kids, when I'm going to be parenting, if there's no structure in society to support the children, that when you come, they can sleep, there's a need to family. So there's lots of pressure even for the family, because of the family household which has grown up with young girls, rightfully so, establish their own families outside that there's a support system, and on their own, kids have to raise themselves. So
yeah,
that's what we're discussing. We easily talk deeply about children in households. No child can raise themselves. And we can't, and we're making the norm in the country to say this is a child in the household. And these are some of the things, because even checking to say the very children who are this home based, who are difficult and to find problematic, what is common, so that we really understand better, because there's also not enough understanding. And the last one also, which he raised about teacher training, is also to follow up where the incidents of violence in schools are registered, to say what went wrong. Without blaming the main teacher in Northwest, it's a whole question about teacher skills in how to escalate violence. But if you follow the case again, the child is very problematic, and the teacher, young teacher, and he was a scientist, and not defended the teacher. So how to help the difficult child who could see that something went wrong, which escalated the violence? The feeling was, it was a fight over means, he was repeating himself, and the teacher obviously said, this is very problematic to say, I want to, and he really, yeah, lost it. So it's all those things that we're saying also for the teachers, and the learners, how do we as ourselves retrain our teachers to understand the difficult child? And the last one, which I just addressed in the race, is also making sure that we have informed interventions. Because some of the interventions that we take as normal, we are told by the test, sometimes they're more dangerous than we don't have the data. For instance, we're discussing the overthinking model of really removing difficult children, putting them in a common school. And I told that it creates a toxic environment, and they become hardened and even worse, where they influence each other around their behavior. So we are not helping them. So it's also all the things we're saying, what are the things that we should not do to aggravate the situation, because we're in a panic mode. But let's just say, I'm glad that we've come to social development, maybe at the next time, this concept paper about how do we really create the safety net for the raising of children between social development, police and ourselves, as one of the measure of stopping the access. Minister of Justice was telling us that there are more than 4,000 inmates were serving life for rape. So it's quite clear that it's not being said. So we just believe that the safer thing is to save men and save boys. That's what would be safer for our children. It's not a quick solution, but we just think that's what has been best in education, to say how do we work in the current society to protect our children and create the safety net that makes them safer men and safer boys, so that we don't wait for the rape kids. By that time,
thank you very much, Minister. I think it is appropriate for us as the police to come in after you've spoken, because it's where we find the learners, is when we are already seeing them in the police station. and we are fighting for in police stations. So what we are dealing with is the symptoms of a bigger problem that you are dealing with. Minister, the National School Safety Framework has been designed specifically for us to address the levels of violence in schools. And as you said, we want to manage the schools as a safer place. We have spoken to the National Police Commissioner General for Toilet to increase the number of unannounced visits to schools. So we don't want to call it a rape, because a rape is associated with something negative. And when you're having a rape, you're assuming already that the child is a criminal. Because you rape drug houses, you rape a negative space, you rape a crime game. So we don't want to call it police rape. We want to call it unannounced. I think the language that we use in the police is one which already assumes the child is a criminal. Minister, we have from the International Commissioner's Office that said that Colonel State. So General Sektola, we are working at the high level, at the level of the Minister, the Deputy Minister, to assist in this search. Because if we do not address the matter at school level, at home level, by the time the child is school, it is already falling there. Now, Lieutenant General Jaster is the Acting Divisional Commissioner for Visible Police. So just Honourable Chairperson and Minister, we brought a very senior team and delegation. The members of police are here. I do not want to introduce them. But just to show the members of education, of basic education, that we do take the matter very seriously. Chairperson and Minister, anecdotal evidence, just last week or week or 2 ago, we went on an oversight visit to the Western Cape. The most sought after gunman, hitman for hire, all gangs hire this hitman. He's the best hitman right now in the country. He's for hire. This man is a gunman. He's a hitman. It's a 15-year-old child. It's a 15-year-old child. Now this 15-year-old child belongs to you. Chairperson, this child does not belong to us, but this child has fallen into our circle because something has failed this child. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, when we have meetings in communities, and when the National Minister and the MEC have meetings in communities, those meetings are just, this is 10 o'clock meetings. When we have meetings on safety, when we are having meetings on gangs, these meetings are predominantly attended by children. So, our audience during the day, in the morning, I think we also have to look at the role of adults versus the role of children. So children have become very strict adults, instructing adults what to do. And adults have become very obedient parents, receiving instructions from children. To the extent that these children are very senior in the hierarchy of gangs, threatening parents with guns, running amok in society. That's what I'm saying. We have very powerful children and parents who are complaining. So we would like to reverse the cycle of violence in our society. We have prepared a document. We've also been preparing a research document on this. So, Honourable Minister and Chairperson, is there any kind of document on the role of the police. We'd appreciate that. I think we are now working at a cluster, which is a release. And we look forward to working with this cluster. And be assured of our commitment. With your permission, Chairperson, may I allow Lieutenant General Jackson to introduce the presentation, and Colonel Taylor will do the presentation. You do that. Lieutenant General Jackson will do it. Chairperson, I hope you understand that women are Lieutenant General in the police. Lieutenant General. No. There's a whole full of school children. Echo girls. Honorable ministers, honorable chairpersons of both portfolio committees, honorable members of the portfolio committee, all other attendees here, good morning. I think the chairperson has given us a very good introduction. And has actually just explained the circle of crime. The circle of crime works in the way that she's explained, that police only comes in when everything else has failed. So I think, and I really welcome Chairperson, this portfolio committee, having a joint portfolio committee, so that we can really assess where our failures are, not playing the blame game, but come up with constructive solutions. So thank you very much. That is just a presentation overview. I will not go into length into the overview. Let me start and the purpose. Let me start with the background. The implementation protocol was developed in terms of the intergovernment relations framework already in 2011 and was signed off by the Honorable Minister Motsekga as well, who spread it here with us today. Now, this collaborative protocol, if you look at the purpose thereof, the purpose is the partnership between the Department of Basic Education and CEP is to promote safer schools and to prevent involvement in young people in crime. I will speak later about this protocol as well in terms of what the gap that is there in terms of the protocol, and because we are busy revising the protocol due to the threat that has changed since 2009 up to now. The threat has really changed in our schools. And the protocol aims to render school-based crime prevention service that is preventative and proactive and characterized by the development and implementation of interventions that deter potential offenders and also to empower potential victims and also past victims. Further, it is there to encourage an integrated multidisciplinary approach that we work collaboratively as stakeholders together to mobilize stakeholders. And also to use a community-based and inclusive approach to address the needs of the school in terms of safety, and also to promote proactive interventions that enrich early childhood. The protocol further aims to assist in building capacity for the school community, especially learners, to prevent and manage school safety issues, and to promote the image of theft and build positive relationships between school, police stations, children, school community, and police. It also seeks to promote the use of crime prevention in order to ensure school safety and to build understanding regarding the importance of prevention and shared responsibility for everyone. If you look at, we have also, together with the protocol, we have also developed guidelines for school-based crime prevention. Now, these guidelines that we have developed were specific for our police officers. So when they go into school, we are guiding them in terms of what to do at school. However, we do have a gap, Minister, and the gap is that we do not have a formal training program for school safety. And it's one of the recommendations that we would like to make, that we have joint training for school safety, our state police safety officers and teachers, that we have joint training. So when we have a standard approach to safety issues, and we actually share the same message when we speak to children, not to confuse them at this stage. It would be part of our recommendation as well. Looking at just the guideline, I'm just giving a broad overview thereof. It was developed by CES in 2009, so you can see it is an outdated guideline as well, and intended to be a resource for South African Police Service members working with youth crime prevention and school safety. And the guideline is aimed at providing a framework within which the South African Police Service should work in support of school safety programs. We have just given them the guidelines because communities and environments are not identical, they've got different needs. And we present the guidelines in such a way that they can actually adapt to their work at the local police station. What we're also going to do with the guidelines, and we've already spoken to the Department of Education, that we would like to see that we, except for the joint training minister, that we also look at a standard toolkit that we would like to make sure that our teachers and our police safety officers use. So the development of a safety toolkit when we interact with children so that we can give them standard messaging. We know that we've got different acts and people are interpreting it differently, so we don't want different messages to go out there so that children can know what their rights are. And just looking at the achievement of the South African Police Service, since we've introduced the school safety program, we have managed to link 3,982 schools. These schools is where we have officers that have been appointed in Haiti to be linked to the school specifically. We've got an annual target in 2016-17. We had a target of we've identified 1,212 schools, but we've only implemented at 1,210 schools. There were some of the schools we had to adjust because there were some of the schools that we've identified that were problematic schools that closed down. One such one was the East Coast Christian School in KZN, and then the Womalethu School and the Salom Kisi School. Those are the schools that closed down at that year, and we did not implement, or that's why we did not. So these targets are set together with the education department. What we do is we identify problematic schools specifically. These are only problematic schools that have been identified. So every year when we do our planning, we sit down with the education department, we sit down and look at specifically, and Dr. Whistle has indicated that where crime in the community is high, your incidents at schools are also high. So we identify those schools and then we appoint. Now, it is a challenge because our structure does not make provision for school safety officers. So it is an over and above task. You would have a station like Mitchell's Plain. I think Mitchell's Plain has got 56 schools, while there's two police stations. And it becomes problematic because you now appoint two officers and over and above task to police 56 schools. And if you look at the ratio, it's a bit problematic. But we're busy working on that. There are ways and means that we can overcome it. Over and above this, we've also embarked last year on a junior commissioner's project where we have gone through a robust competition with learners where we appoint the junior station commissioner, junior cluster commander, junior provincial commander, and junior national commissioner and deputy national commissioner. We would like to roll that out to ministerial level as well at the later in the years to come. But what they've gone through robot selection, which include exercises on crime prevention, that to see the understanding of the children of crime prevention. And we have selected 1,149 of these junior commissioners from your schools, which are now the advocates for crime prevention in their schools. We have selected them, we've taken them on camps, and we are envisaging another camp to come within the financial year, so for them, just to also prepare them. And they are also working closely with the school safety officers. They are also, I'm sure you have seen some of them on television, where they also, when they reach, where we have outreach programs to communities, we let them speak in terms of crime and advocate on behalf of learners. So we have seen this as a good practice, and I think there's a lot of work. It was the first year last year that we've done this, Minister. There's a lot of work to be done, and if we proceed with this, we want to do it biannually, the competition, so that we will increase them the advocates for crime prevention going forward. Then Dr. Whittle has already indicated that we've got a whole program. We've got a national crime combating forum instruction which we have issued with regards to closing of shopping and drug outlets within a 500 meter radius of a school. So that is a program which is on monitoring, and then we are also doing the school searches. And I can, the most common items that we confiscate at school will be your drugs, dangerous weapons, and alcohol. Those are the three common things that we take from learners. And I've already referred to community individuals, specifically where our activists are very active in. Then in terms of maintenance of school, maintenance of school is a sustained action by SAC to deal with persistent challenges or problems at school. Those are schools that we have not linked per se, but we have programs at these schools in terms of awareness raising and in terms of crime prevention. Or where a principal has indicated that the school has got a specific problem where our people then move in, but it's not linked per se, but it's programs that we have there. So the table on the next slide, I will just indicate to you, we in 2016-17, we had 8,456 such programs. In 2017-18, 8,536. And then in 2018-19, 8,757. And these awareness and interventions are mostly on our priorities, such as drugs, gangsterism, domestic violence, sexual abuse, and human trafficking. Also the latest threat in terms of cyberbullying and bullying itself. If you just look at the National Schools database versus the database of police stations, you can see that the schools are outnumbering our police stations totally, because we've got 23,950 six schools versus 1,151 schools. So if you look at the ratio of police safety officers versus schools, we are totally outnumbered. If you look at the ratio of, you want a police officer actually at the school once a month, that means it's 20 working days, 20 school days. You can't give a police officer more than 20 schools. And this is outnumbering us totally. That's why if you looked at the schools linked, that's why that low target was set there, so that we can just be able to identify those real problematic schools so that we can move into those schools. I think I've spoken to quite a few of the challenges already. Dr. Whittle has spoken to the school safety committee where it's not established at all schools yet. That becomes a challenge. And where it is established, some of those are not functional. And then the demarcation of municipal boundaries, I think we will overcome it very soon. We are currently going through structural changes where we are introducing the regions. We've already piloted it and counting to be rolled out to the rest of the country, because our boundaries and the education department boundaries doesn't fit to the same it's not the same. So when we give statistics, we give it in this way, and you give it in terms of your region, so it becomes problematic. And then we have indicated that it's not a sole responsibility, there's no post for this, per se. And then we are currently in the process, chairperson, to review the collaborative protocol. We acknowledge that it is a societal problem, which requires all stakeholders to play their part in the and to create a safe learning environment. And the following, we have identified, we had a meeting together with social development already and education department or one or two other departments, and I think there is a real role. As we can see, there's a political role, there's also a role from our officials to work together on this. We have identified threats that were not there, threats like cybercrime, bullying, children dying due to vehicles that are not roadworthy. We have seen food poisoning. We have seen children die because of poor infrastructure. And there are many more threats. So we have decided as the police that we will call on all other departments that can be involved. And we are going to renew the school protocol. It cannot just be signed off by education and sex alone, because everyone has a role to play. I think about specifically, and Chairperson Jumat has referred specifically to police coming in when everything else has failed. We have seen the white paper on families that has been approved in 2013 by the fourth government already, Minister. And we are of the opinion that that will help school safety a lot if it's implemented within the school safety program as well. So we have identified the Department of Higher Education. They've got a role to play. Department of Social Development, Department of Justice, Department of Health, Department of Sport and Arts and Culture, Department of Transport, Public Works, the Metro Police, South African Local Government Association, Community Police Forum, and also the CIRA. This list is not exhausted. As we work, we will pick up, oh, but this is also threatened, we will include all of this. So we are in a process where we are going to have a two-day workshop planned for October, where we were going to have all school, all departments on board to review the protocol. So, and we would then like to have it ready to be signed off by everyone during the school safety month, which is February 2020. So we are working towards that date. So, Chairperson, in terms, in conclusion, I want to call on the department to maybe look at declaring all schools as firearm-free zones. The doctor has indicated that there is an act that provides for that, firearm-free zones. There is an act, but the school has to apply, the education department has to apply to be declared to the minister. So that process I would recommend that the department look at specifically. Firearm-free zones as necessary, specifically in gang areas. If we want to start, that we start in those gang areas first and then roll it out. And then what we also propose is that we start having community policing as a subject in school. Then children can take on that patriotism and start realizing their role in terms of policing, because policing is just not police alone. As police with community. And we would like to recommend that the department consider that. And the next thing is, so there is a national safety forum, but what we want to recommend is that the safety forum becomes a subcommittee from the national joint, and then report through the national joint as well, so that there can be some kind of, you know, that you account for what you're doing. Minister, that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, Minister, that concludes the two presentations.
could we consider any additions and then further questions and comments? I do not know all the members present here, so my humblest apologies if I do not know the honourable members. So I'll just make it a general rule that we go down on my left, your right, and you introduce yourself. And then I come right. I don't want to say that those are the members of the league who be biased. and then we come up my slowly. Could we do that? We'll first take additions. I'll take additions, comments, and questions. Could the presenter, as well as the senior official, please note his comments and questions? Let's take the comments and questions for the sake of time. The comments and questions, as well as additions. Thank you very much. Minister, would you like another bat? Thank you. Chairperson?
Yeah.
All right, then we'll go down the list. My list, you're right.
What is the meditation and then there are fast thinkers on the
then
Jefferson, thank you. Yes, I am. Was I responding? Ask my questions now. Mm-hmm.
But you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I was just about there, Jefferson. Good morning, Chairperson, colleagues. My name is Okita Blanche and I'm a permanent member of the Police Committee. And yes, may I go ahead with the question, Chairperson?
Yes, please.
Chairperson, thank you. I want to, you know, just comment the two presentations that we received. And, you know, it's quite encouraging to hear all the work that has been done to date. As a general comment, Chairperson, you know, this is a sign of, you know, what is happening in our communities, and I would start by recommending that we need to try to get more, you know, community involvement, and, you know, obviously a lot of things that can be done, you know, I think that sports and recreation can maybe go a long way to do that. Coming to the police, I just want to ask a question. Do you have any intelligence on, you know, this specific subject? And, you know, if you have, you know, what is the implication of that? Now, the implementation of the framework, Chairperson, we got quite a bit on that as well. But, you know, the general mentioned, you know, the fact that schools are outnumbering the police. My recommendation would be you have sector policing. Now, obviously, every school falls within a certain policing sector, and my recommendation would be that they consider, you know, to make it part, because you cannot police in silos. The school is in a specific sector, and that needs to be part of that sector policing-wise also. Chairperson, I like the idea of the camps for the children, because I think that is one of the ways to, you know, to make this work, is to make the children more involved, and maybe, you know, one can consider, you know, running campaigns, and not only on the safest school, you know, maybe safety should be part, you know, of, you know, the measurement to, you know, decide on, you know, top performing schools. Then, Chairperson, I'm just about done. What is the impact of the program where that was implemented by the police? What is the impact in terms of crime in that specific school? And the community policing part, I also like, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm coming from that side. I'm coming around. Nancy?
What's it mean?
Oh, there's a forgotten hand. You want to go ahead?
Thank you, Chair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My name is Mari Sukan, and I'm a permanent
member of the basic education as well as social development. I also just want to say thank you for a very spirited presentation from the police. It is really heartwarming to see the passion that accompanied the presentation to the presenter, that is. In terms of my comments that I would like to make or recommendations, I think with what has happened in the last couple of weeks in the country, we have such an opportunity really to drive collaboration to address gender-based violence or violence within our schools as well. And I just want to, maybe it's a question or a comment, for a collaboration or a campaign that we can drive together with the police, social development, and basic education to raise awareness and to address what is happening in our schools. Is there such an initiative or something that we can work on, you know, that we can drive through social media, because most of our children are all the time on social media, and it would be a great thing if we can use the momentum that is currently there to have a very effective campaign to raise awareness and to educate and to inspire young people really to do better. That is my part, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Member, we're coming down.
Oh, you're coming down.
We're starting from right from there, we come down. So just be patient, we're starting the row, we'll come down very slowly.
No, I'm
you want to start the row?
No, I can't stop.
Go ahead, let me in the chair. when a child is still not to be attending school regularly to find out what's going on. I need to find out who does those home visits. Do we have a database report on such visits that have been taking place maybe in the past financial year? And is there any reduction, is it helping in terms of kids missing school? The school social work program in slide 20. I heard the doctor saying the social workers will need to be trained to be able to deal with the kids at school. Now my concern is there are social workers who have been trained by the DFD. That money has been spent to take those social workers to university. Now, do we need to spend more money training social workers, which at this stage we have social workers sitting at home unemployed with those qualifications that were paid for by the department? What is the plan on that? Are we going to use more money, or is there an alternative plan? The issue of extramural activities, it is a comment. It would be very nice that the DBE looks into those very deeply, especially in township schools. My mother stays opposite two schools, primary and high school. And when it's time for extramural, you see kids sitting on the playgrounds and doing nothing. And when you ask, because I would go and ask what is happening, why are the school children just sitting at the playground, we'll be told it's time for extramural, but there's no coach with them. Do we have coaches in our schools, especially in the townships, that are taking care of the extramural activities in our schools? Lastly, I would like to find out on the faith, the role of the faith-based organizations in our schools. Are they taken into confidence? Are they part of this? I know that there are no religious classes in schools and all of that, but I think that the faith-based organization should be given a chance to come in, because I truly believe that they can be able to come in and help what is going on. With the police, I just want to find out about this linking of schools. Forgive me for my ignorance, because I was not even aware that there's anything like that. What is the process? How do you identify these schools that need to be linked with the police station or with the Department of Police, and how does it work? What is the progress on that? And other questions, Chairperson, because like I said, I have lots of those, but I will write them down and send them to the department. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Next, please don't forget to introduce yourself.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Nwana Makwetle Rumelu Mashabela. I'm studying the Portfolio Committee of Basic Education. So I'm covered with some of the questions, but I'll ask only few questions. Yes, according to the department statistics, am I covered, Chairperson, because...
Please, no. This unruly honorable that is giving me your name, so he's assisting me, giving me your. He's reprimanding me, you know, because I don't know the three R's of basic education. I spelled your name incorrectly now, it's for free.
Okay.
So my apologies. He's asking me what you're reading on the right. So please, honorable member, continue.
Yes, I'm labeled unruly.
Okay, thank you very much. So I said, according to the department statistics, Chairperson, 48% of learners are reported being bullied on a weekly basis in naughty schools. So my questions are, one, what are the causes of violence identified? And are all educators in Northeast schools given a specific training to identify those aggressive or bullying learners? And again, are all learners received assistance from the professionals or experts? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Member.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Kulogelo Khoen Malachi. I have a comment and one question. I think my comment is that both the reports of the police and education reaffirm the fact that part of the main reasons of the violence in schools, the biggest contributor is the inequalities that are there in the country. Because if you can check, the schools that have got the highest violence are the ones that are in disadvantaged areas. Now it confirms that if we address the issue of inequalities and poverty and unemployment, we can easily resolve the issue of school violence. But my question is on the kids that are taken, the learners that are taken from schools for training, and who are expected to come back to the schools to identify or assist school safety. Now, our schools are in communities that are mainly violent. Now, what is the protection that the learners get after school if they have identified wrongdoings? Remember, these drug dealers that bring drugs in our schools are staying in our communities, are the ones that are giving these learners to sell the drugs in the schools. Now, if that learner identifies a drug dealer in the school and reports the drug dealer to whatever authority that is there, now, what protection does the learner have post outside the classroom? That is my main question. Thank you.
We'll go back to Honorable
Mafanya. Yes, thank you. My name is Tsebo Mafanya, a portfolio committee member on police. Thank you. I'd like to make a few comments here. The issue that has been addressed by both the ministry, the education ministry, and the police, the main contributing factors are the socio-economic conditions of societies, in particular those who live in the townships. Now, when the schools are built, there are certain amenities that are left out. Sports facilities, that is recreation facilities. The proximity of police station to the schools. You know, a school is being built in an area where there's already rape and crime. So it cascades, it influences even the students, the school kids, to copy the lifestyle of the community that they come from. Mm. Number two, it is well and good to say the law requires that the chebins and all these other things should be 500 meters away from the school. But the reality on the ground is that the police are not doing well. They are not keeping that. It doesn't happen. And you look at the kind of privileges that is in terms of liquor. You know, the South African breweries promote indulgence, kids to indulge in drinking sprees without any mechanism from the schools, from the government as well, with the pursuance of the taxes and so on. There's so much, because we are rated as the highest drinking nation in the world. And that also affects our learners. Now, taking to the rate of unemployment also has got a direct bearing to the learners, because you may find there are people who parents are unemployed and you expect kids to go to school under such conditions, whereas they've left miserable conditions from their home and they are expected to perform well at school. Now the outcomes, the education outcomes from those kids, they are going to, at some point, end up being delinquent. So, what do we do about those things? So, those collaborators from different departments, they are indeed needed. But the reality is there any political will to do that? Because it's well and good to be reading these fancy papers, but when there is no implementation of what we believe in, or what we espouse it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't help us. Because my take is that the kind of discourse like this has happened in the past and now. And we have to look back and say, what did we achieve? Are we not just going to do the same pep talk that happened in the past and then repeat the things that has been happening like that? We also know the shortcomings of the police. They will forever tell you that there is no transport, the police morale is low, and yet we are made to believe that the very same police will do some good work, which is not true. They can't. Now, what is happening on the ground and what is happening at the top from commissioners and them is quite different. Because ordinary men and women in boots, in uniform, they will tell you a different story from what we hear now. Because you'll be told there is linkages and all that. And the reality is just a few schools that are there. What remains of the remainder of those number of schools that are not attended to by the police? So how would us really advise ourselves here to say we are in an emergency situation and it can't just be business as usual, we have to talk and do nothing about those things. Because at some point there are bureaucratic means also that stalls this process that we are here and thinking about. I would like to end there. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone. Good morning, Minister. I just want to say, like, first of all, I'm a bit disappointed by the Minister of Police and also the Deputy. My name is Nonsa Dalabella Machetti. I'm the member of the Committee of Basic Education. Just to go back to what I was saying, you know, it's a bit disappointing that the minister didn't come, because I think this is a very crucial issue, and I think maybe we should have an opportunity to have the Minister of Police to come, or even the deputy to come and come and listen to us as the situation. Just want to make that point. The questions that I would like to ask is with regard to, we talk about the fact that, like, you know, those schools that are near Park. And this is something that we've been talking about even in the Swiss Parliament. It's not that, you know, taverns are closing. We are seeing more and more taverns closer to school. In my area where I'm staying, recently a tavern has been opened very in close proximity with the school. I just want to find out from the police, what success have you had in ensuring that these taverns have been closed? And if we give you a list, like, how soon do you think you are actually able to close the taverns in those areas? Also, with regard to bullying, Minister, we talk about bullying and say that it is an issue. But, you know, it's a bit difficult for teachers once they're told, like, you know, you cannot, not actually bullying, like, you cannot apply corporal punishment at school. I mean, I agree that it shouldn't be. But is there a policy that actually guides the teachers to say if a child misbehaves, these are the steps that you have to take? I know that currently there's a code of conduct in the school. But then if that doesn't work, what happens then? What tools can the teacher be able to apply to ensure that, you know, they don't go to extent of corporal punishment? What is it that they can do? The other thing, also, Minister, that I would like to ask you is about the comprehensive sexual education. I know we're going to have a presentation next week, but I just want to find out, because I've got a couple of questions that I would like you maybe to give clarity to. Specifically, if the issue that parents have been talking about is that were they given an opportunity to comment, to actually, you know, to be able to have an engagement with the department, were the religious organization given an opportunity to comment on the new policy, and also, what happens if a parent decide that, you know, they don't want their children to be given this the program, you know, to say, you know, they don't want their children to be part of the program. And then what happens as well to a teacher that says, I don't want to be giving this this program to the learners. Are they actually allowed to opt out of the program? And also the other issue is regarding the police. I mean, it's very difficult to ask questions on police because, as I said, the minister is not here, so we cannot really, officials cannot really commit. When you're talking about the number of the ratio of school against the police in the area, what I feel like for me, as you said, like, you know, we don't have enough police in the area, we don't have enough police stations. But what ratio are we looking at that you'll be able to say, like, you know, if you have this ratio, we'll be able to combat the violence around the area? And also, you know, talking about police stations, they're not only for that particular school, but they are for the particular community in that area. So the police stations that you're talking about, how many people do they have, how well resourced, are they trained to be able to deal with issues of violence in schools?
Thank you. Before the next honourable member speaks, honourable member Matthew, we have our portfolio committee meeting on a Wednesday. As the portfolio committee on police, we have additional meetings this week because it's the week in which the minister is in the transcript. So we call the minister to meeting tomorrow. The minister will be in a meeting with us on Thursday. He will be releasing the crime stack for Thursday. But because we had a commitment to school safety, we scheduled this meeting with you. And we did not postpone this meeting because we committed to this meeting. The honorable members in the Portfolio Committee of Police are committed to addressing the matter. And when we do our oversight and have our meeting with the minister on school safety, will certainly take up the matter. So I do not think that we should see the apology, because there's no absence. The minister and the deputy apologize. So I do not think we should see the apology of the minister and the deputy minister as being an indictment on the manner in which we view this matter. Please, honorable minister, we do, our minister views this with seriousness, and I'm sure we will know about that in the inter-ministerial meeting. Thank you, Nick. Mr. Kamina.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Chantal King from the Portfolio Committee of Basic Education. Minister, welcome in the committee again. School infrastructure, as you stated, is really a challenge, especially when we talk about fencing, because it gives criminals more access to the school grounds. And it gives learners more access to bringing weapons into schools. So my question around that would be, how many schools still need to get proper fencing? I know we had a backlog, Minister, but that is the question that we also need to raise. How safe are we and our learners in school, on the school ground? LSA learners, LSA teachers, the challenge there we have is it's one a school. You go to a school like Chompazita High School in East London and you get 1,450 learners at that school in a very hotspot area. I used to teach at that school. How will one LSA learner actually have the capacity to assist these learners? That's the challenge we have. I would say that a school don't only need one LSA. We should really consider, like there was previously said, also for psychosocial services. We should bring them more on board. We should have more social workers at school. Mm-hmm. And that is where we are also lacking, to deal with that surge of violence of learners at schools. Rape kits. The challenge of rape kits, like you said, by the time it gets to a police station for a learner, it's too late. And I do agree with that. It is way too late. If we ever consider in training our LSA learners as well, LSA educators as well, or some of the educators at school to administer the rape kit systems, to give them access at the school of rape kits. Because in most cases, you would find that some learners are raped at school, like you say. And by the time the police get there, have we ever considered such a program? Security at the school, there's no money. We all know that. The budget of the department has been cut of basic education. And then we sit with community members who take up the role for security. Have the police consider rolling up a training program for these community members stationed at school on how to effectively deal with security and violence at school, because some of them are really just civilians trying to make a difference in their communities. We are evidence-based when it comes to getting results, especially in Oxford schools. Do we have a progress report on how successful the implementations at these hotspot schools are? Do we seek success, or has violence just escalated in those schools? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Next.
Of course, I
am.
And
the chair is coming down the kids. Thank you, Chair, and the colleagues. I would like to, the issue we raised about social workers, but we all know that we need therapists of different kinds at schools. And I was wondering if we are following some sort of hotspot schools where we can maybe first see that we have those therapists that are needed, or will we go back to the old system like in districts where we actually have a pool of specialized individuals, whatever position it might be needed, from which schools in that district or circuit can pull. I'm also very concerned about, and I know in some provinces we have longer than 5 kilometers to walk, and I know that we don't always have learner transport under DBE, but under transport portfolios as well in the provinces. And whether we could go back to, it's not a through free, but at least it could be affordable, is to have back the walking buses system where learners could walk together in dangerous areas where there are lots of bushes and bridges and rivers, as well as a whistle thing. We started some minor, because it's also costly, but not that costly, is that learners actually can have whistles to blow if they are in danger, and local communities around can hear them. But I would also like to know two things. The one thing about my colleague Nongsa referred to talent. We have adult workshops, and we also have gambling places very close to school property. And I think when the lieutenant spoke about other departments, I think local government has got planning department where we used to not allow zoning for these type of businesses to be close to schools, and maybe we must revisit that and see how it can be implemented. And I know in the rural areas it's much more difficult than in an urban area, but you can't have those. Uncle George, who used to be on education in the postal legislature, always fought very fiercely against those type of businesses next to schools, which we supported. The other thing is cell phones at schools during school hours. I feel in some way some of the recordings that came out on violence against learners or teachers were very helpful. But the thing is also true, and I haven't got any stats, that a lot of sexual pornographic stuff is being going around on cell phones during school time. And I know the minister, it's about 2 terms ago, we amended that act for searching learners for whatever they bring to school. And maybe we should really look at the usage of cell phones at schools during school hours. For what is it used? I can't think that it's necessary unless you have an emergency to use a cell phone at school. And I think we must try and stop that. And Chair, I'm really sorry that I have to go, and my question will pick up from my colleague. And I just want to remind us all, and the Minister will know very well because we fought a long time. Cases like we had at Central Solwani School in Limpopo at a time where we had blind and deaf learners on the same premises and hostels.
where special activities happen, because deaf learners would go to the blind learners, the link and stuff like that. I hope we have no more schools like that, where that type of behavior can easily happen, because one can't see and one can't hear. So that was very difficult, and I assume there isn't any more. If there are, we should know, and maybe also go start with the whole system. Thank you. And Chair, sorry, just one thing. I have spoken to the Chair of Police before, and to that, we still have a culture in our rural provinces where to leave officers in the station. If a woman or a young lady goes and lays a charge of sexual harassment or offences or rape, some police officers turn them away and say it's in the family, not our tradition. And I hope that at the police officers to the station, this message must be clear that it cannot be. A case must be heard if there's evidence. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, Chair. Sorry. First, let me greet everyone, especially our minister who is present with us and the court of the committee. My name is John Bozo Shabalala. I'm a member of the Basic Education the Committee. My pitch is that let me first thank the presentation, both presentation from the Basic Education and the CEPI. I think to me we need to be very positive about this program, about this presentation that we've been given, because it means it's a step in the right direction. For us as a committee, we just have to agree to the programs that have been put in place and add if we can. But I just want to say that maybe we need to look in terms of the best practice. What are the best practices that have happened in the past or in other areas? For example, to me, the issue of safety in school is not just the issue of police only, and it's not just the issue of basic education alone. It is an issue that's supposed to involve the entire community. Because when the community is involved, you can see that there is a difference in those areas. For example, the best practice I'm talking about is in Wat Dabera in Clermont, in KZN. Wat Dabera, there is a war room in Wat 20. That war room is one of the best war rooms that you can find police and everybody else participating, especially from the community, to make sure that the issues of schools is taken into one of the priorities. Maybe at one stage, Madam Minister, you will try to visit that area and see what is it that is happening in that particular area in terms of where the school issues and school safety is concerned. I'm sure that there is a lot that we can learn from the even to practice in other areas in terms of what the role of the community can be. And also I just want to look in terms of, because also in that war room, there is a participation of ex-offenders. Ex-offenders, normally we treat them as the people that we should be scared of them because of what they have done for them to be ex-offenders. But also we need to look in terms of what is it that they're contributing to the community, especially in educating the children not to be involved in criminal activities. But maybe that is dangerous. Also in terms of what the research that you have got, I got scared earlier when you talked about the research that you have received, but it needs to be looked at and see if it's not also in danger to our children. The kids that the presentation from the police, the safety toolkit that has been talked about, I think it just can be speed up as well to be given to the teachers and the children. It will definitely help in terms of making sure that the people know what to do when things are happening in their own environment, in their school. But thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much,
Honourable
Member.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chapter 13. My name is Sulela M.
Thank you very much.
You see, I shifted and I didn't realize that I'm disadvantaging myself. I was seated there, but the aircon was dealing with me. You see, someone from Sinus, I came here, and I thought the nearer I am, the more considerate of the family. Little did I know.
Don't worry,
your
proximity will allow you to have longer time.
In Afrikaans, they say, after Oskom, we can
recover. Afrikaans is so good, people
are higher than Chairperson, thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Ronnie, and my father's name is Murwatek. Yeah, Murwatek. I think let's start from the point where we say, let us give credit where credit is due. You see, sometimes the problem we make, especially as politicians, is to have a problem before us. And instead of addressing the problem, we start fighting amongst each other. I'm glad that there came a need that this collaborative approach, as mentioned by the SAPs, men and women in blue, it finally became a serious necessity. But commending both presentations, and I think we must go straight to the Minister of Basic Education and say, I don't know who initiated this, but because she is here, let us say she is the one who initiated it. I'm just guessing, it's just a positive, a constructive judgment. I mean, everything has to start somewhere. That's it.
It's the policy.
Sorry, members of the, what you call, thank you. That is the Department of Basic Education has put the whole challenge on school safety and violence within our schools amongst the six apex priorities on the sixth parliament agenda. It's a sign of how serious this whole issue which has brought us together is. That we all, I'm intimidated by my own chair. Thank you very much. That
I'm not intimidating you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Today I'm a chair. That we all have come together in this fashion from more than one department, it's a sign that we attach a meaningful value to the challenge at our disposal. And that the Department of Police, the men and women in the blue, also see this need, and hence they call it a collaborative protocol. It's a serious sign of concern that the matter on the table needs our speedy attention as of yesterday. But for starters, let me indicate, Chairperson, that sometimes we get ourselves into this trouble because of one thing, politicizing the school environment. I'll explain what do I mean. You see, you find two parallel communities, the department has approved one school, the two indunas start fighting, and once the two senior people in a community fight, their subjects will follow suit, and there will never be stability in that school, or within the school, that particular school. You see, there was a way, of course, sometimes the beginning of this year, when teachers got killed, learners killing each other, one teacher organization rose up and said, I think it is about time that teachers, I'm now talking directly to men and women in blue, that teachers must go to school
fully armed in order to protect themselves. It was completely out of order. But the bottom line remains, who should and who will be able to protect them when they are attacked by those surveillance? We can't condone that, but we must look for protective ways in order to safeguard their safety in all respect. Before I get to the few points I'm having here, let me give a practical scenario. One time I was driving to school, the beginning of the year. You know that normally teachers will reopen some days before the learners. I just encountered a big board. I'm going to what Nomsa was talking about with regard to the tavern and the liquor students. The school where I was working, there is one liquor student, number two, directly straight to the school, number three and number four, in that big in what you call community. The first one, a big board, placard, written, back to school, bash. We went to school, we condemned that. And after condemning that, it leaked to the community. Because when learners came to school, there was no way we could have condoned the back to school bash before they come to school. So, after condemning that in the morning devotion, I became a target. I will not go deep and explain how I tried to defend myself. But the problem is, you see, the more you go out to condemn some of these social ills, the more you become a target. Then hence the question comes, who will protect those whistleblowers and those who are trying to fight for sanity and justice? The two points which I want to raise now is the parents. There is a point raised here, Chairperson, on the parents and caregivers. It's true, everything starts at home. But the bottom line remains, majority of our kids are coming from migrant labor kind, are coming from the families where their parents are either the migrant laborers or else the kids themselves are left alone for one reason or another because the parents might have been demolished. So under those circumstances, when we talk about the concepts of parents and caregiving, who will take care, give care to those kids when the parent is like myself? I have traveled more than almost 2,000 kilometers and working here. I'm like a migrant labor. I'm not alone. There are many of those people who have left their kids on their own. And the back end, we say there must be parent and the caregiving. How do they give them? In the case of child-headed kids, it's another challenge, which we might have to face and without even shifting it. Number two, the working with the subs. This one is an excellent job. If we have to address the whole issue, visible policing is supposed to be the norm of the day. And I'm going to say to my fellow members from basic education, that rather than to wait for the COP to adopt the school, Honorable Minister, let us encourage the point where we say the schools must adopt the COPs. Because we are the ones on the receiving end. Well, there is this approach of adopt a COP school or adopt a school by the COP. I am going to make emphasis that it will only work if our schools are the ones who must go out to adopt the COPs, rather than to wait for the COP to adopt a school. Because the receiving end is on the part of the school, not it is affecting the COPs, but we are in the main, the receiving part. Number three, provision of security guards. We have agreed, according to the report, that hotspots, as presented, let's identify hotspots and make it a point that within those hotspots, we make the necessary provision of school guards. But now the problem is, You see, when you provide a security guard to one school, Honorable Malachi has just indicated that the majority of schools which are suffering this impact are the schools in the rural areas and the most disadvantaged areas. And it becomes a very serious problem here. And hence one is going to say, because when you appoint security guards, it must also go with standardized payment, remuneration and all the like. You can't appoint a guard at school A and omit school B. It's going to become a problem as well. The general point which was said by many on the discipline is true. We can't replace this one. Discipline must start from home. Discipline must go into the community where you live. Discipline must also be the subject in the whole school as a whole before it comes to our learners, as we talk about. It's a whole sequel. The last one is the stakeholder, the involvement of the stakeholder. I'm saying we are seated here in a cluster fashion. Can we kindly propagate and make it a point that outside this meeting, cluster meeting, in our communities, the same clusters are able to see it. It must really start somewhere. But in this case, as a member of basic education, I would say education authorities must take the bull by its horn and convene similar meetings within their communities so that what we agree upon here must be replicated or be cascaded down there. Because it is going to be one thing for us to sit here and talk good English and the Afrikaans, but if what we talk about will not be implemented down there, it will be null and void at the end of the day. I thank you very much.
I thank you, Honourable Member. I'm sure you realize giving you that time made it worth waiting for your opportunity to Honourable Member, I would like to inform you that you must thank the chairperson of your portfolio committee for arranging this meeting. But you see, she's also a child of the Northern Cape. So because it's a family, it's not a regional provincial identity. You know? And because she's a daughter of my province now, I had to respond. And honorable members, you must remember now, we haven't even met with the auditor general yet. Because her meeting was prioritized. So you can just imagine. I'm going to hand over to your chair and then I'm going to come around with the minister. Your chairperson will speak.
Oh, okay. No. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I think we all agree that we really need a local DSP to be part of this meeting because I think it would have helped us much more, you know. But the reality of the matter, like the minister has said, it will remain the same item. It's not an item that will debate today and it ends because it's continuous. It's continuing. But the few issues that I would want to just raise with the department, the both of them, is the the police here, the hotspot of this incident, which provinces are the hotspot of this, and in terms of also the district from provinces, which districts are the hotspot. And to DPE, the safety framework doesn't have an impact, and where, for instance, can you tell us that it has the impact? And if there is money spent on this safety in school, which school, for instance, unannounced visits that they would have in school, and then how much would you use, for instance, for something like this? Because I think these are just ad hoc incidents that happen. But I agree with the speaker that has raised the issue of fencing. Probably what we need to really prioritize is make sure that we fence our schools. And from the side of the police, the issue of drugs and alcohol is so raised that it is the those are most things that we confiscate from the schools. How does the intelligence work? Do you probably get intelligence in terms of how does it come to schools? Because there is a member that is raised, it happens in your schools where you've got poor people. So who is bringing the drugs? Because of course our kids would not have money to buy those drugs. And then, thank you.
Thank you. We'll take responses. Honourable Minister.
So thank you, Chair. One attempt to answer everybody, because some of them will just use perceptions and things that people think we should consider and accommodate. So if we don't answer the question, it's not as if we are not doing it, but we take a note and we consider it as advice or a view that we should consider. Like committee involvement, I think we also agree that where we have committee involvement and supporting the committee activity, schools are actually even safer, where schools sometimes allow women to come and plant in schools, so there's always a presence of an adult when children want to go to the bathroom during school hours, it's the ritual thing, but if there are people outside, so they're not vulnerable, they're just being there on their own. So those are the things that we've also observed. Some of the information we require to go and collect, for instance, like how far are we with fencing, provinces we should do fencing, because the implementation of infrastructure is a provincial competence, so we don't necessarily collect it all the time on areas which are done by provinces otherwise, but we can request that information from provinces. And agree with our chair to say working social development is key, because I think as most members are saying, safety is a societal issue and the role of communities cannot be underestimated. The role of parents in schools, homes are the best schools. So, and just to emphasize to parents also their responsibility, because there's also a tendency to outsource the responsibility of raising children to teachers and everybody else. Sometimes we say, I'll tell your teacher, whereas the teacher is supposed to tell the parents about difficulties with children. So it's also just really making sure that parents are encouraged to take their responsibility seriously as a first issue and play their part, support schools, but also get schools to support the community. So I really want to say that. There was a question about racial attacks. We don't collect statistics in terms of rape. It will be children to say there are two boys which were fighting. So we will not be able to differentiate to say it was a white boy hitting a black kid and a black kid. So I don't think we have this kind of information. That's not how we collect our statistics. We don't disaggregate our information according to statistics. Even when a child is dead, you'll be quite curious to say one learner dead. You don't say one black learner dead. Just say one learner dead last week, which is the way we do things. On social workers, when you say we need to train social workers specialize also. Your social workers dealing with elderly, your social workers dealing with children, your social workers dealing with psychosocial. So we're saying we want, once we want to train them, is to train them school social workers on the different
activities that we need. Mm. Some we need them for psychosocial services, some we need the therapists. So, and they have to ready, because what they come out of this is a generic degree, right? And we have special needs in schools, and that's where the training comes from. Bullying, and what we have emphasized about school safety, that's how we title the school safety. Not just general crime that we're dealing with. We focus, but we have to prioritize. In our case, what is the biggest problem? We don't think bullying is the biggest problem. So some of the things that you ask us was about rape kids. I mean, why would we keep rape kids if rape is not a major problem in our schools? And they're also critical. So I'm saying also members, if they could also just save us from the fact that we can't give the problems of the world. As a school, as much as a child was to lead the society, there are things which are out of our control. Right? So I thought I should raise that and say there are priority areas. And they were saying how many, what would be incidents about bullying. So we did indicate when teachers are upset, when started the presentation to say under which conditions do we have this biggest problem which is bullying. And agree on things like fencing, guards and other things. We said the majority of cases is letters against letters in the classroom. Right? So we should have focused on the question of letters against letters in the classroom. So that even if we have a guard, the guard won't help us fix our main problem, which is letters against letters in the classroom. And that's why we made that point. The letters said to say we can give guns and other things, but that's not our problem. Our problem is then against the other classes. And that's where we're focusing in the main. So there are external threats where you require bars and other things, but the bulk of our challenge is around classroom, and therefore we're prioritizing that as our response because we can't do everything. Remember, Madaji also raised the issue about poverty, which is quite true to say, we're saying the majority of cases where there's violence. The poverty, but we have to deal with it now. That while we are fighting the war against poverty, we have to identify what happens, which circumstances, which does happen, where there's poverty, but there's peace. So we have to deal with it now, so that we have broad issues that we have to deal with, but we have to say what are the specific ones. And among others, what we pick up, where you have poor communities, but coping, because there are poor communities where there's just no violence. School leadership, we mentioned that where there's order in the school, children toe the line, they get the tone of the school, it becomes the culture. Where parents are involved and the parenting, we find that there's better management of the school. But there are also problems that are affecting like your young mothers, your teenage pregnancy, where you have, when some of the parents who come to a meeting can see that they're going to be talking to children about children. Right? Their children themselves, they have own challenges, or maybe some of them would have had children at the age of 13, they're in primary school, they're bullied, they're talking to an 18-year-old, it's just really, so parenting is a problem, any teenage pregnancy is a problem, challenges around single parenting can be a problem, economy can be a problem, but also the whole society. But then where most of the hotspots are, it's not necessarily only in poor areas, but where the violence in the community themselves. You find, they say, where do you get more? Your cake flats, there's lots of things. You're quite correct. We're getting reports that 11-year-olds go to meetings during the day, but their parents can't use them to go to school because they're scared of gangs. When we can go in and go to the area and say, gangs give way, our children have to go to school. Right? Much more bigger than ourselves. And we're aware of those problems, especially for cases where we get small kids not going to school because parents can't leave them into the hands of gangs. I went to a school in the Eastern Cape, and there was in Cape, and there was a huge contingent of protectors who opened the school. I said, why are we having such a big contingent of protectors? It's a rock. It's a primary school. And I was told that there was one that has been killed, which are in the primary school, right? So I'm saying
I'm not throwing the hands in the air and say we can't do anything, but this collaboration and this working together, that's the only way we can hold ourselves and protect it. And some of the things are just beyond ourselves. Mm-hmm. On new schools, which have done spotting fields, I think we're agreeing, but the majority of schools are built with this connection for of the 26,000 schools. As a new system, they should have been built with the 26,000 schools, and those schools that should be built have been golden standards. So the difficulty of reversing, people think we're really comprehensive, it's reversing the legacy. It's the schools that we have established on the infrastructure. In the meantime, there were challenges with building new infrastructure. But I concede that the fact that you don't have enough sporting schools and other things continues to be a problem. Also, in terms of the what we wanted to say, target schools, we're not targeting, because we don't want to fix what is not broken. The targeting schools where we have scientific evidence that there's a problem of violence, and that's where the police comes in. But in some instances, as I said, the majority is what is happening inside. So police can help us with your classes and other things, but our main problem is never again, never. So that's why the school safety teams are very key to us to deal with the internal threats that we have at the center. So by trying to tie down all schools where there is no threat of external violence, where the majority of the cases are your internal violence against kids. On saying when we did the sex education curriculum, we consult parents, there's a process that we use, the procedure. There is standard, subject by subject. We go for public comment. Right? We go for public comment. We can't go to individual parents to say, how do you like our curriculum? Then, as organized commissioner or as individuals, then they write to consider, agree, or disagree. So the law does not allow us to put into practice any given curriculum without putting it public. So we can assume that everything that we have done would have gone through public comment. But if a parent comes and says, I don't want my child, you know, a big system, almost, 12.5 million. So if parent number one says, I don't want this for my child, it depends what the other 12 million say. If the other 12 million says, we agree, disagree. So if you're not there, at least there's a good dispensation in the country, then you're free to go in the way that you see. But you can't satisfy every parent from the 12 million. So if you have support from 12 million, the 12 or even the 500,000 if they are forget, but if 12 million agrees, you proceed, otherwise you won't be able to proceed. So in terms of consultation. On violence, disciplinary measures, I think what we said very much about violence begets violence, and that we never encourage corporal punishment in our schools. Because there's evidence to say children who have grown up with violence and no self-esteem become violent themselves. There are lots of concerns this one. And obviously, we will not say remove corporal punishment and not talk about alternative discipline. There is alternative discipline. We work through the schools and other things. And the last one I did, Dr. Widom, so that I don't take too much time, around whether there was a question here about what is the impact of the education in front. Every question is not sexuality education. Every parent will know that every child now knows that this is my own. Those are the things it's cracked up. So I can't give you statistics to say all the 12 million, all of them speak no, but you teach them to speak up, you teach them also to not allow people to harass, you teach them to go in groups, you teach them, those are the things you speak about every day in children. But obviously, the mere fact that you still have reductions of violence, there's still a need to continue doing work. So what the impact is, so we have to measure everything. So I guess we have to measure the COVID, we have to measure now how many kids are no longer fighting in classrooms. I guess that's what you want us to do. You consider how you measure how many incidents of bullying. But I think we can give information about just percentages, not the figures, because we don't connect to the level. even that practice, remember, so I agree with you, but that's what we also need in terms of informing. To say why it has risen, yes, Dr. Bishop said, there's no silver bullet to change. Different communities manifest different kinds of values, and that's why sometimes we need to be that you have to understand your context, your environment. I know it's a secret, an unspoken language to say, you don't appoint certain people in certain posts because, you know, in that environment, if you send and change those boys, those kids are going to send you for a round. So you consider in many respects what the context is in which you're operating, even for your leadership, even for your intervention, because they want to be the same. Fencing can be an important thing in Gauteng, but in that cases, and of course, most of those schools are peaceful. Shaikwai has not been fencing. We were fencing simply to protect the school, but this is not to be violent. But, yeah, and just as I leave, we get another violence which is out of control. Even they don't get a violence at the school. I visited the school in cases and during the general education change. The school was finished. No windows, no door. Then I asked them to say, what is happening here? They said, no, that's a social nothing. When there's a community that was in the middle, they meet there, that's where they agree to say, well, I say you social nothing. And that's a fighting space in the school, because I think it's no man's land. So if you have agreed on a fight, it seems that's a neutral place to go and fight him. And that's where you will be so
thankful.
North Korea and South Korea. Yeah. Yeah, so, let me stop there and agree with you that we need to come with you because I still believe that some of the problems, as much as we can fight as hard as we can, unless we have an integrated problem, which includes other people. So, giving you not win. We come here and never be complacent. We get that same sense of the problem. Some of the things are out of our control. There's nothing we can do without getting support from other people. We can't do whatever. We can do what we can, but there are things we can do on our own and help collaboration with the city and the community.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister.
Thank you.
Thank you, Police. Honourable Minister, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Minister, I'm going to try and respond to some of the issues. I think the issue of intelligence has come through very strong, and I want to start with that one specifically. We do unannounced visits when we have confirmed intelligence that is being collected either by our intelligence or that has been given by the community and confirmed then by our intelligence. Unannounced churches or visits means that we don't even inform the principal about it. So we'll come and we'll do, because it might be intelligence that has been collected through unconventional methods, which we then execute. And that is where we mostly get the drugs and firearms when we go to school. So that's the unannounced one. The announced visits are the ones where the principal know about it. Only the principal has been informed, or it's actually been requested by the principal, because the principal has got information about what is happening in the school, and it's been requested by the principal. So there are two types, Chairperson, of visits to schools. It is the unannounced one and the announced one, which means it's only the principal that knows about it. Then in terms of the safety of junior commissioners are not intelligence collectors. They are advocates for crime prevention. So they are only involved in awareness raising. That is where they come. They become advocates for awareness raising. They are not intelligence collectors. Then in terms of, I am not going to divulge in an open forum how we collect intelligence. There is an act that protects that, so I'm not going to divulge in terms of that one, but I can say conventional as well as unconventional methods are used. And then in terms of protection of whistleblowers, the South African Department of Justice is responsible for protection of whistleblowers, and they do have specifically the witness protection program where people can be involved. I think those are questions that were asked around intelligence. In terms of sector policing, I want to assure the honourable member that you have been in the more than 25,000 awareness programs that has been done at school, and those are done through sector policing specifically. Sector policing is already linked because schools are in sectors, I totally agree, and that is done through sector policing specifically. And then the minister has spoken about the impact already. Linking of schools, the process, the honourable member, is that the police officer that's been identified and who also makes himself, because it's a doctor, it's an over and above function, that makes himself available, gets appointed in writing by the station commander, which is then undersigned by the principal of the school and the member him or herself. Undersigned by them, then the principal knows if there's an incident at school. That is his contact, his or her contact person. And that person becomes 24 hours available to the school. When the principal calls, they respond to the call of the principal specifically. They are also attending your school, your assemblies at school. They're also attending the parents' school meeting, where they, chairperson, where they also address the issue of discipline at home. Because that is when there's parent meetings specifically. They are also attending the school safety forum meetings at schools where it exists. And where it exists, they are part of developing the school safety plan for that specific school. So that's the process that is followed. And then in terms of the cabin that is close to police, close to school, licenses are issued to taverns by the liquor board and not by South African police. Unfortunately, there is not an integrated government spatial development plan that makes provision for how an area looks. And before the act specifically, taverns were licensed, and then schools will come after taverns, and that becomes a litigation issue which we are not involved in. However, and there's two types of liquor outlets. So when the honourable members speak about this, we need to know if it's a licensed taver or is it a shabib. Of course, they're unlicensed taver. It's a shabib. So shabib are supposed to be closed by police because it's illegal. Taverns, there's inspections that must be done, and that is closed by the liquor board. So there's no spatial development program that tells us where the taverns are, close to the church, or close to a school, and those kind of things. But it's an audit that can be conducted, I think, which should be conducted, and the liquor board should be made aware about that specifically. I am aware that the Department of Land and Rural Development have started with a project for integrated spatial development system, which all government departments will be. They actually started with developing the system in 2016, Honourable Chair, which they are starting to roll out within the next few months. It would be glorious to have such a system, because all government departments will be able to have access to it. The only thing is that all government departments must make sure that they keep the system updated. I was honored to attend such a presentation in the week, and I said, this is the tool for us. And I'm sure all government departments that were there said, this is the tool for us. Because exactly what the honorable member's concern is, we'll be able to pick up on a system that yes, it should be within a 500-meter radius. So that is in the process to be rolled out very soon. They are currently busy with training and right before the end of financial year, that will be rolled out. Then in terms of the ratio, we use the population ratio as well as the other geographic information within the station. We call it the station profile. So station profile has got how many schools, how many bus terminals, how many taxis, how many shebeens, how many drug houses, outlets, which is updated every month, and that is then utilized by our organizational development component that does the resource management. So they then allocate resources against that. But we don't use specific ratios, so many police officers or so many schools. That is not the ratio per se. But they take the global picture of the station area and then allocate resources to that. In terms of the access to rape kits for schools, Honorable Chairperson, that would be a legal challenge because you would have the chain of evidence will be broken and we will not have food to stand on. So it can never be that it is in schools. What we are doing is that there are Tutuzela centers and right across the country where victims can be taken from the school immediately. That is managed by DSD with other role players as well. We are all on board, and I must say it's a very, very good system. We have red kits there as well, and they can have immediate access to them. The issue of the red kits, I've heard it. I want to say it was an issue. It has been resolved. The contract is in place. For the next 3 years, that problem will not exist, because we have something in place now for that as well. In fact, it was not, Chairperson was not per se a rape kit, we had enough rape kit, it was a DNA kit. So I just want to put that perception to rest. Then in terms of the training program for school patrollers, the Department of Community Safety is responsible for community development. And I know that in the Western Cape there is a very good program with training neighborhood watches and that, and in other provinces as well. They do train because the school patrollers, they form part of neighborhood watches, and then they are trained by community safety. The concern that the honorable member have in terms of the rural areas, I'm glad to announce that we have piloted the traditional policing concept in the Eastern Cape last year, where we specifically linked policing into rural areas, which was a huge success. We had done an assessment, and the final concept has been approved and is in the process to be rolled out. So the issue where cops would go and say, but this is a cultural issue, I am very confident that the traditional policing concept will take charge of that. We have interacted vigorously with chiefs and indunas and over the past few months. They understand their role completely, and they know where to draw the line now, because they would know what is crime, what is our responsibility, and what is their responsibility. And I think the concept makes it also very clear, and members in that area are aware of that as well. Spoken about that. Chair, just want to make sure trying to say. Okay, the hotspot areas, the schools. Chair, we have identified 1,300 schools in hotspot areas for this year. I can forward the list of the schools, the database of the schools, to the committee so that they can know which schools we are busy with for this year. So that we can do. I don't have that information right now with me. And then I've covered the minister, I've covered the others. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members, and to the staff and the minister, my appreciation. I am back to the chairperson for education.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think there are